today's focus is exciting. It's something that Melody and I both feel really, really passionate about. And we're happy to have so many of you come and join us today. And Melody's going to start. Today is about the writing process. Specifically, we're talking about a different kind of process than what most of us grew up with in the normal public schools or even prep private schools. It's the writing process of actually intending when our students have something to give back, that one of the forms they can use is writing. So go ahead, Inelody.
Okay. I'd like to begin today by telling you that I've invited on our call today Natalia and Tatiana. I hope they can unmute themselves when I need to call on them, because people ask me all the time that if they, how do we know that a Thomas Jefferson education works? Well, I just like to look at the fruits of our labors, and the people that you get to see as our mentors, our mentees, you get to see Natalia and Tatiana, who are the products of the Thomas Jefferson education. And it's the most motivating factor, I think, when we really look at someone and say, wow, that person is a great person, and I'd like my children to be like them. I actually have a family member who said to me one time, your kids are so great, Inelody. I want my children to be like yours. And I said, well, she says, how do you do it? And I say, well, we homeschool, and we do a Thomas Jefferson education. And what I think is very interesting is a lot of people will look at my children at the ages of 6, 7, and 8, and they're really not that impressive other than, you know, they're good kids. They're okay. But academically, they're just not that impressive. And so I haven't had children who've been, you know, ahead of their class or overachievers. I don't think in any way necessarily, but something, when you follow the process of a Thomas Jefferson education, something magical begins to happen to them right around the age of 12, 13, and 14. And you see this process, and I tell you right now, I have a 13-year-old in my family, and Tiffany, it's so exciting to me to watch the process one more time, for the fourth time in my family. Watch this little butterfly just emerge out of her cocoon and to see the beautiful colors that she's coming with and to see the personality blossom and the dedication to becoming a scholar and thinking and wanting to be able to contribute at a great level and thinking of the lofty ideals of greatness. I can remember sometimes when I was a youth, and I would go listen to youth motivational speakers, and they would say to us, you are the next generation of leaders, da-da-da-da-da, you know, and I would go home kind of thinking, I don't get it, but, oh, cool, that's really cool. Well, the thing is, my kids get it about how they are the next generation of leaders. They understand it. And I believe, well, of course I believe it's all because of what a Thomas Jefferson education has done for us and our family. It's improved my husband and myself and our marriage. It's improved our family. It is what my children are. They understand when they come to a certain age in their life, they are scholars. And they will be scholars for the rest of their lives. And as I was saying, my children are not—they're not overly exceptional as youth. And I think, in general, a lot of people will say that people who homeschool or do a Thomas Jefferson education, that they aren't necessarily—they don't look exceptional at you know, these young ages.
At age nine, I
look at your kids sometimes, Tiffany. I think, wow, you know. Jacob's really exceptional in reading, and he's a voracious reader, and I love that. But it's his natural ability, right?
Right. Well, and, you know, my other kids all waited till they were nine. They didn't start reading when they were four. That was unusual.
Yeah. And it's, but the beautiful thing is, when your children come up to these, you know, come up to be 12, 13, and 14, you're going to see the same exact thing that, that Jacob's already exuding, you know, being 14 years old. Himself,
right,
you know.
Right. And I see what you're talking about, that that when the child gets in the scholar projects, all of a sudden they actually begin to excel from where their peers are, where before they may have been equal to or sometimes even behind in some of the academics. They no longer are by the time they have gone through the practice and apprentice scholar programs. And it's not just your children and my children. We've seen it across the board. We get the teacher reports in all the time from the teachers around the U.S. and up into Canada. And it's really amazing what the students can do. And part of it is because of the difference, the different form we use when it comes to teaching them to write. Because half of this is all about thinking.
Right. So I want all of you to just take a little breath and be okay with where your children are up until the age of 12. They're okay. I want to reemphasize something that I've learned in the last 2 years. I have studied many of the great philosophers of education, and I have studied what people have said about children who learn and what processes they go through as they learn Montessori and Dewey and Suzuki. I have a whole list of these, Holt, of these people and what they say about how children learn. What I think the beauty of a Thomas Jefferson education is I do believe that we have finally found, we have finally, after years and years and years of searching and looking, we have finally found the balance. How do we really teach children? How do teach children really learn? And where do we want to take them? You know, we've talked about how that when they're in the love of learning phase, they're really, really practicing initiative. And they're really exploring and getting their fingers into things and really getting their brain to think about questions and ideas and you know, they jump around to all these things. But eventually, we want them to start learning submission. I will tell you, I meet a lot of homeschoolers who intrinsically understand this. And so they get to the age of 12 and 13 years old when they're saying, Mom, I need friends, when they're saying, Dad, I need to have a peer group. I need to have more challenge in my life. And parents that are homeschooling and doing a great job start to put out their feelers. Oh, where can we go? Where can we find something for our children? And there's a lot of alternatives for people out there. But invariably, they choose the public school system as their fallback. My son is in a school up in Idaho right now, a private school he's attending, and having a wonderful time and meeting some fabulous, fabulous people. And has a mentor that I couldn't think of anyone better for him. But he recently went to a high school musical, and he was watching a musical, and he said, Mom, every single one of the leads in the high school musical used to be homeschoolers. They're all gone back to school because there's no other alternative for them. And that really makes me sad because I think to myself, it's so wonderful that these parents have worked so hard up into this you know, 12 and 13-year-old age to help them get a vision of wonderful learning. I will tell you, that's when they need to, have to. It's essential for them to take them to the next level of scholar skills, to get them to scholar phase.
And it's so much easier to do that with a peer group and with the scholar projects.
Yeah. And because the parents understand that they need to start learning submission, right, what are they looking for? They're looking for something that's going to require something out of them, right? which is a normal time to feel that way. Wouldn't you agree, Tiffany?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just review really quickly some of our scholar skills. Do you remember we have skills that we want them to be able to acquire at the end, by the end of scholar phase. And I'm going to go through these five areas of skills: reading, writing, computing, speaking, and thinking. Reading, writing, computing, speaking, and thinking. Today, we're going to be talking about writing. But what I think is very interesting is writing hinges upon all the other four, don't you think, Tiffany?
Yes. In fact, I remember I was 18 years old the first time I found myself in a class by Dr. DeMille. And there were a handful of us that first year at George Wood College. It was kind of a risk to be there. It was a leap of faith to be there. There was no track record. There was no nothing. There was just, I knew it was the right place for me to be. I knew it was the place to get the best education in the world. I also knew that one day I wanted to write and to publish. And there were various reasons why I knew that, but there I sat, and Dr. DeMille looked at us, and he said, do any of you want to become good writers? You know, there were some of us there, and some of us knew we wanted to, but we were probably pretty scared to raise our hand. He said, this is what he said to us. He said, good, read 1,000 books first. That's what he said. And I sat there, and I looked at him, and my eyes bored into him. I'm sitting there going, are you serious? Because if you're serious, then I have to do it. He was totally serious. Read 1,000 books first. I wrote it down on my paper with a little star by it. And when I put a little star in my notes, it means action. it means one of the most important things I'm writing in my notes that day. And it said, read 1,000 books so that I can write well.
It reminds me of Louis L'Amour, Tiffany.
Yeah.
How he, for those of you who are interested in the story of Louis L'Amour, it can be found in The Education of a Wandering Man, and it's one of my favorite books and examples of what it is to become a person who's fulfilled their mission, and very scholarly. When maybe a scholar education wasn't being offered at the time. Of course, in the 1930s, it wasn't being offered by that time. By that time, we'd have completely lost what it is to become a scholar. But Louis L'Amour, when he was 16 years old, he was a junior or a sophomore in high school, and his father was actually a teacher. I'm sure he had parents who really had given him a great foundation, a love of learning, and core phase. And he said to his father, I'm going to leave school now. It's getting in the way of my education.
Yeah.
And so Louis L'Amour left school.
But he never quit his education.
Yeah, he never quit his education. In fact, in the back of The Education of a Wandering Man is a list of all the books that he read in the 4 years that he wandered. And it's like 100 books a year, isn't it, Tiffany?
Well, it was more than that. But one time, someone asked and said, "Do you think I should study and go about my life's mission the way you do?" And L'Amour looked at him and he said, "Do you read 100 nonfiction books a year for the fun of it? And if you don't, I don't suggest you do it the way I do."
Most people need an outside thing
to make them do it.
Yeah, what I think is very interesting is that you said nonfiction books. Believe me, he was reading fiction books.
Yeah, at the
same time.
But that was just it. He's like, do you do at least 100? You know, because if you don't already do this, you're not going to do it the way I did it. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's so funny because you ask him, would you suggest that people do it this way? And he flat out says no.
Right.
It's the harder way.
Yeah.
He says, no, don't do it my way. It's the harder way. find a good mentor. Find a system that helps you get this kind of education. The problem was he just didn't have it available to him, so he had to make it happen for himself. But he spent
a lot of informal mentors instead of formal ones.
Yeah, he had a lot of informal ones. You know, and the books themselves became mentors to him. But he did have a really fabulous core phase that helped him.
And even scholar phase.
He
learned his scholar skills from his family. He didn't jump out on his own until he was beyond TJYC level.
It's true. You're exactly right.
Yeah, he had these skills. He could do it then.
So, as we were saying, reading, thinking, speaking, computing, all...
They're all related.
They're all pivotal, all of the pivotal points of writing.
Right.
So what we like to say is in scholar phase, we'd like to be able to learn to read like a, do you remember these, Tiffany? To read like a lawyer.
Yeah.
To write like an author, to compute like a mathematician, to speak like an orator, and to think like a philosopher.
That's right.
That's our goal by the end of TJYC, that they can have the foundation for all of those things. One of the reasons why we do... in the third semester of TJYC, we do the Supreme Court simulations because we really are serious. We want them to be reading like a lawyer. We want them to be able to read the briefs and the opinions of the court and understand what they have to say. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to be easy for them. It's going to be hard.
But they do it. Yeah. They do it, though. That's the amazing thing.
Yes, they do it.
Yeah,
I mean, I have an assistant in my class right now who is in TJYC, and she says, oh, I can't help you with that right now because I'm working on my Supreme Court simulation. I said, well, how is it coming? And this was like 2 months ago. She says, I'm so confused. I'm not going to be able to do this. This is just so hard. And yesterday I talked to her and I said, so how is your Supreme Court simulation coming? She said, we got a handle on it. So do you understand the case? Have you ever been able to read the opinion and the brief? And she says, yeah, I totally get it. I know how to do this. 2 months ago, you were telling me how hard it was. Well, you know, I just learned how to read it. You know, I learned all the abbreviations and what the words meant, and I learned how to, I totally understand that it's just my statement of facts, my statement of issues, and my argument, and I know how to do that. That's simple. It's amazing to me, you know.
It really
is fairly simple. It's simple. We just think it's complicated. Anyway, so
I'll tell you one more thing about these scholar skills. When we first started, it was years ago, when I lived in Cedar City, and I remember having conversations with Dr. DeMille, with Rachel, and with different teachers at the college, and I remember having this aha, and saying the difference between those who succeed. Now, you have to realize the bar has been raised with the entry-level students at George Wythe over the last 14 years, absolutely. And I know that part of it was the initiation of a focus on scholar skills, because I remember saying the difference between those who succeed the first year at George Wythe and those who have to wait a whole year before they can really delve in and get this kind of education is those who have scholar skills and those who don't.
Exactly.
Because everybody who comes in has really high vision. The people who come in have a high mission. Most of them have developed at least a certain amount of ability that they have character. There's not a lot of students at George Wythe who don't have character, okay?
Yeah,
so their ability level is at least high enough to say they've got character and they're really working on building their integrity, okay? But not everyone's scholar skills was solid and high.
Yeah.
Many times it was very, very low. And one of the first seminars we did on scholar phase was a major focus on scholar skills. And I would get literally 100 emails a year requesting from me a list of scholar skills. And every time I went to write back to these strangers who would email and say, please give me a list of scholar skills, I never felt right about it. And besides which, it was in Oliver's book under With Princeton and Harvard skills, okay, they already had the list and didn't know they had the list, and I just would cringe inside, and I thought, why can I not give them a list? And Ellie, this was really important.
This is our list. This is our list.
This,
read like
this
a lawyer.
List. But I
like
could
an
not
author.
Give them, that's right. I could not give them a list, and here's why. And we don't just hand this out, Ellie. I'll tell you why. You have to be mentored through Scholar Skills.
Yes, you do.
That is what our projects are about. They are writing projects. They are reading projects, computing, speaking, thinking. You are mentored through Scholar Skills. And so if they just had a list.
And you cannot mentor Scholar Skills until you've been mentored through Scholar Skills and doing
right.
it yourself.
Right.
That's why when I
exactly.
teach TJYC with the kids, I actually write a research
That's
paper.
Right.
When I teach Sword of Freedom, I actually write a hero report. I'm in the middle of writing a hero report on Chamberlain right now. It took me a long time to figure out who I wanted to have as my hero because I had to really think and I had to
because it gives you
a lot
spiritual eyes. Because it gives you spiritual eyes.
Yes.
It hones them in. You know what they're feeling. You know what
helps
their depth is.
Exactly.
Right.
It helps you understand where that student is and what they're experiencing.
Yeah.
You cannot teach it.
It really is a concept that you can't just have a list of scholar skills and give that to someone and that helps them. This is actually, when the art of mentoring was lost, then part of, you know, obtaining scholar skills was lost because we are mentored through them. And we want to focus specifically for the next hour on the writing and how we are mentoring our students. And we start with them at the practice scholar level. But we have to realize that if they missed two things before practice scholar, then you need to be able to back up and help them obtain that during their practice scholar year. And nobody's going to focus on this right now,
okay.
on these things.
Tiffany, I was going to say that I really believe that one of the reasons why we have we want a list of scholar skills is because we think that the written tradition is everything that we need to refer back to, but we have really lost the oral traditions in our society, which is mentoring.
Yeah, and there is a list there. I just knew that me giving them a list wasn't going to help them gain scholar skills. That's what I knew.
Yeah,
I knew it wasn't going to help them one bit because they had to be mentored through them.
Because we need to start relying more on those oral traditions, passing
yeah.
those things down through in a coaching environment, in a one-on-one environment, in a classroom environment where we're all learning that together. Okay, so let us look at the writing process itself. The writing process begins with speaking. With talking.
That's right. It's actually an oral. It starts out, you hear what you're going to write before you write it. You think of it first. Speaking is the first step. Thinking is the first step, okay? Feeling and thinking. And that's important to talk about, the feeling and the thoughts.
Right. But
speaking is the first step of communication. That's right.
It's the first step of communication. So you're feeling it and you're thinking it, but the first opportunity for you to communicate it is through speaking. Right?
There's lots of levels of communication, even if you don't speak. I mean, a baby communicates, okay? So it's not it's kind of tricky here. What matters, the point that we're trying to get at, though, is that if you have a practice scholar student who was not able to express themselves verbally in their home, they may have a more difficult time getting it out on paper unless they did a lot of speaking in their head. If they spoke to themselves, I'm serious.
Yeah,
if they spoke
totally.
To themselves in their head a lot, they'll be fine. But if their head was empty, okay, their papers are going to be empty.
And Tiffany, that's a really good point. Unless they were doing it in their head, having dialogue in their head, because there are people who are internal processors.
Right.
And there are people
right.
who are external processors. I have a young student that I am working with pretty intimately right now in writing, and he's an internal processor. And he has to think it through in his head before he can put it out on paper. He has to think it through in his head. And what I think is interesting is he's been kind of a shy person didn't speak a lot, but you know something's in that head.
Right, right.
You know it's got to get out.
Okay, so it's crazy to think that writing actually starts with the words audio. That's what the word I meant, is that it's actually an audio thing.
Okay, so the next level we go to after we start learning speaking and language is we start narrating our stories. We start telling our stories. Mom, I had a dream last night. I had this dream that this monster was running after me, and on and on, right? And I love Christina Wardrop talks about how her children get up and they just narrate these wonderful, incredible dreams, and she says, "What, were you dreaming all night long? Did you go off all night? Do I have to listen to this all night?"
And the narration is important because they're actually learning flow and point to point to point, and it's so important.
So if you keep saying to them, get to the point, get to the point, get to the point, then you're actually stopping them from their flow of thought. So
yes,
I know
sometimes people have to get to the point.
It takes a lot of patience to help them get
too.
To the point. We have a point to the story. Exactly. But what you want to be able to do, what you want to be able to do is get them that narration, that beautiful narration, into some kind of creation. Into, like my son has a dream journal, and he draws pictures, and that's part of his writing. He's not a great artist, but he is a great communicator because he draws pictures and he posts them all over the house. These pictures of him, you know, being attacked by the bear and Zaki is coming in and saving him and there's mommy and daddy, and you know, we have dream pictures all over the house. And they're not just dream pictures, they're stories that are going on in his head.
Right.
You know, that he's creating. We want
That's
them to take that first level.
Way to foster that.
Right.
My little girl, and this is really important, were you talking about Matthias? Or
yes.
Is it Zaki who draw? Okay, Matthias. I thought it was Matthias. They will manifest that creation differently. Melanie, my little girl, her creations are her dances and her songs. She dances all over the house,
her
and they call her
and
stories.
Her ideas.
Exactly. Her feelings, her thoughts, everything, and her songs. She writes, she doesn't physically write them, she sings them everywhere. My family, my extended family.
And she doesn't rhyme all the time.
No. But it comes out, it's that creation process. And so with our young ones, we encourage the creation and the expression of what they're feeling and thinking. And whatever form it comes out, I think it's beautiful what you told us about Matthias.
Yeah, my friend Stephanie has a little girl just like that, who sings all of her creation. It's the place of creation where they need to have that expression, and it comes out in many different ways in many different children. If you'll just look and think, how is my child expressing his creation, his narration, creating his narration?
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to take them to the next level, and that is to take the creation that they're telling that they're creating and. Maybe around the ages of 9, 10, 11, 12, I don't know, start asking them, could you tell that story to me so I can dictate it in the journal? Or could you write that in a journal? Or could you tell the story in a journal? And many times it's you just taking dictation for them.
Right. I know that we try at least once a week. Our goal is three times, but our minimum is once, where we actually let the children dictate stories into the journal.
Right.
So they can see it. It's being modeled. So the child's not being ignored during core and level of learning. They're
so
watching,
fun.
Oh, my gosh, my story. And they come up and have us read it all the time. Read me the one where.
Yes.
And it really, it moves them through understanding where they're headed.
Have this wonderful little notebook that has a place for them to draw their pictures. So, and then it has lines underneath it. So Matthias will draw his pictures, and then I'll say, can you explain it to me? And he'll explain to me the story, and I will write it out. He loves it. Is that my story, Mom?
Wow.
Yes, that's your story. is that my dream? Yes, that's my dream. That's your dream. And so he can see it written, and all of a sudden it becomes meaningful to him.
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to take him to the next level, which is the writing of opinion papers. And
this is the level we hope they come to as practice scholar students. But once again, if you've got 15 students, you have 15 different levels.
Right. Right.
But we spend 2 years asking them to give us their opinions. And it gives them time to go through the pre-things if they haven't had it, and also begin using their hands, working on actually physically writing down their thoughts, which is a lot of work.
Right. And I have some writing samples for you. I want to tell you, for those of you who are really, okay, I'll just say it right out. I came from a conveyor belt model. I had no intention of ever writing in my entire life. I never did. The way I expressed was through music and through my creations of sewing and those kinds of things. I had no intention whatsoever to ever write. My husband said to me one time when I was first married, he says, I want to write a book. I said, oh, cool, that's really cool. And he says, don't you want to write a book? And I said, no, never. No, I don't want to write a book. No, I don't want to write a book. And he says to me, come on, Anelody, there's a book in everyone. Well, there's not a book in me. What I think is really interesting is I published before he published, because I found the book in me, because I had an idea. I had an opinion about something that I needed to have the skills to persuade others that they could offer alternatives for their children. But before this, I really didn't. I had opinions, but I was a philodoxer. I wasn't a philosopher. I wasn't a lover of wisdom. I was a lover of my own opinion. I had opinions, but they were founded on nothing but my own opinion. Now that I had thoughts and ideas, I actually would rather change the opinion papers to my thought papers. Don't you think that would be a better word for us to use, Tiffany? Our thought
it
papers.
That would be great. They're thought papers. I like
or
that.
Idea papers.
Thinking. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, idea papers. They are. They're their ideas. And it's amazing what you just said, because you had opinions, but you didn't have the scholar skills nor the ability to reason. But when you did, when you actually had the ability to reason and you could think clearly and show proofs and show if we do this, then this will happen, then you could write the book that was in you.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I had the ability to write the book that was in me.
Well, and it actually formed the book that was in you.
It's true.
It really did. Because until you could think clearly, you could think, but I mean in terms of thinking in form, thinking in systems. Because the book was a persuasion of, you know what, anything that has to do with the great debate, the books in the great debate, the great conversation, the classics, they are all discussing systems and forms. They are all discussing a way to do something. And most books that you read are trying to get you to do something a certain way. And that takes a level of thinking. So you have to be able to compare ways to do things.
Right. Right. So, as Tiffany and I were talking about, is our projects are a writing course. If people would understand that this is what it is we are... They're writing courses. People say, oh, you're studying the Constitution? Yeah, we're studying the Constitution, and we're learning how to write. Oh, you're studying American history? Yeah, we're studying American history, and we're learning how to write, because we understand that it's part of the process. You can't... maybe some of the lies that we've been believing is that you can separate the parts from the whole. You don't want to separate the parts from the whole. You want to give them a big picture of a whole so they have a reason for the parts of writing and spelling and reading and all of those things that you can take out.
That's one of the downfalls of the conveyor belt education, is separating the doll's arm from the doll's feet, from the doll's eyes, and everything is separated and segregated. And it's really funny, if you look at any one of the projects, it is a whole. It's the history. It's economics. It's philosophy. It's writing. It's all of those. They're not separated. And if we had to turn it into a rubric, when you have, I don't know if any of you, for your students, have ever had to make a transcription, a transcript, I mean, for them to show what they've been studying and have to turn it into the state or into something so they can qualify to go somewhere. But if you just put a leadership course, they're going to look at that and say, oh, wow, that's great. But if you break it down to what it really is, the reading, writing, history, philosophy, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, one credit in this and one credit in this and one credit, it's really amazing.
Well, I have to tell you, Tiffany, and in our school district, we can get actual credits, high school credits for TJYC and the classes that we do in the Commonwealth School. All we have to do is we have to go in and tell them what we've been doing, what we've studied. And so I have a student who decided that they wanted to do that because they wanted to get a high school graduation or they needed credit for something. And so that student took in the things that they were doing, and the administrator looked at it and said, "Oh, you can get a credit for writing here. You can get a credit for reading here because you have all the books you read. You can get a credit for history. You can get a credit for," I think she got like 6 credits for Key of Liberty.
Yeah.
And the same thing for TJYC. They are getting a full-rounded education in one project.
Yeah, it's amazing. They move from, are you going to share a couple of those opinion papers?
Yeah, I'm going to share these. What I would like to say is that by the end of their first semester of each one of the courses, each one of the practice scholar classes, they should have written between 6 to 9 papers. And these aren't just summaries or reports. I was talking to a woman whose daughter is on the conveyor belt system right now, and she we were talking about writing and the process of writing and what she was going through with her daughter. And her daughter, I said, "Well, what kind of papers is your daughter writing?" She's in 8th grade right now. Well, right now she's doing book reports, just like book reports and summaries. And I thought to myself, interesting. The kids only do one book report and one summary in the practice scholar level, but they do 6. Well, by the end of the year, 6 to 12 opinion papers. Really,
and that's for one course, and they're usually in 2.
Right.
You know, I mean, sometimes it's double that. At least my son was writing 2 opinion papers a week, usually.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. You know, I mean, and opinion papers are totally different than reports.
Right. Okay, I have some samples here I want to share with you because it's just so exciting to me to watch this process.
Okay,
I'm going to read.
Anneli, I want to comment on this just for a second. I think it's Adler. I think it's Mortimer Adler talks about the 4 different levels of reading. This
right.
is interesting because a report is simply the very first level of reading. That is all
sectional.
They're expecting from the 6th to 9th graders are these reports. That is level 1, that you know what was said, and that is it.
Exactly.
An opinion paper is the highest level, which is, I want your opinion about every thought in the universe, including on this topic. You need to pull from what you've read, from what you've experienced, from what you've been told, from what you feel, from da-da-da-da-da, and the expectation is totally different. It moves them into the thinking category. Not,
exactly.
Can you think what I tell you to think, but can you think?
Right. Because they're already doing that. They have already been doing that in their journaling. You know, I read a book and I wrote a report on it. Or, you know, they've already been doing that. And they will already do it, right?
You have to do the lower levels to be able to do the upper level. It's just that the expectation is so much higher. It's kind of like the expectation when they're 14 and 15 and 16 to be able to read lawyer briefs and write them. There's a major philosophy that's come, I don't know where it's come from, but the things I've read on, it's part of Zen and it comes from the Eastern cultures. But there's a major philosophy that you should not have expectations. Well, I'm really glad we have the
expectations. It's very cosmic humanist.
Yes, it's very common. Like, don't have expectations, and then you'll never be disappointed, and you won't be unhappy. Baloney! I'm glad we have the expectation that they can read Supreme Court cases and have liberty. I'm glad that we have the expectation that they can actually think and express themselves through writing, even when they're 12, even if at first it's only one paragraph. Go ahead and share these opinion papers.
Okay. I want to make this very clear that the parents need to be mentoring these children at home. They need to be sitting down with them every single week, going over writing with them. They need to have I have a friend who I was teaching this in my community, and she raised her hand. She said, "My daughter won't let me sit down with her." And I said, "Have you put it into your system? Do they know that this is what is expected of them, that they come to your parent mentoring meeting with these certain things? That they come expected to having something written that you're going to go over. That they come having something that they're working on. That they come with a planner that has their whole plan for the week and for their education in it. And they're telling you, you know, this is what I'm doing, this is where I'm going, this is why I'm, you know, this is what's required for me in this class, and this is what my... which is what I intend to do, Mom, Dad. I intend to do this week." You know, those are really, really important skills that they need to be learning, and they need to be having in their parent mentoring sessions with.
Well, and if you do it in the parent mentoring form versus just whenever it's starting to stress you out, one is using the form of nagging, and the other one is using the form of productivity. Big
exactly.
difference.
Exactly.
Big difference.
It's the whole Covey quadrant, right? If you're always in crisis, you're always trying to solve your problems that you never have a system for solving, right, because you're always in crisis. But if you get into the quadrant two, which is the management.
You're proactive, yeah.
Proactive, then you come up to much less crisis in your life. When your systems are falling into, or taking care of those things. Okay, so I want to go through this process of writing. I have a sample of one of my students, and I'm going to use this same student. And this is over the course. This is one of her first papers for Key of Liberty, and then I'm going to read a second one closer to the end of Key of Liberty, and then I'm going to read one that was just recent this week. Or 2 weeks ago. Okay, so and this child is 13, into her second year of the projects, and she's in Sword of Freedom, and she's in Shakespeare right now.
Okay, so you're reading one the first couple months, one at the end of that first year, and then one, you know, 3 months into the second year. Awesome.
That's all right. Okay, so this is the first paper. What powers do I have to make laws as an American citizen? And this is her paper. She has a little asterisk, or what a little point. What are those called? Bullets. She has a little bullet, and it says, "I can contact my representative and senator and have them vote for a bill I want." Another bullet. "I can be involved in a lobbyist group." Another bullet. "I can have a sponsor." Another bullet. "I can be effective in my community more than I can at my state or federal." Okay, that's her paper. That's a good paper.
Very good. Very good.
That's a good paper. I'm impressed with that. Those are really good points.
Because what we're asking in all of these is, are they thinking? Is she thinking? Yeah, she's thinking.
Yeah, and
okay.
and she's
Next
very
paper.
Articulate. Believe me, that paper took like, you know, two or three rewrites, by the way.
Right,
That's not the first write, okay? Okay, here's
right.
the second one. And this is the, I think this one actually, oh, yeah, this is the end of the last semester of Key of Liberty. I think it's one of her last papers. It says, the question is it ever wrong to follow the law? Ooh, that's a big question, isn't it? Is it ever
wrong? To break the law?
No, to follow the law. Is it ever wrong?
Okay.
Follow
okay.
the law.
Okay.
Okay. And this is what it's entitled, Daniel and the Immoral Law. Once upon a time, there was a king who made a law that you could only pray to him and no other king or god. A man named Daniel, a good friend of the king's, knowing that this law was immoral, broke it by praying to the God of Israel, for that is where he had his allegiance. He loved the God of Israel. In my core book, it teaches that we should obey the laws of the land. It says, we believe in being subject to kings, presidents, rulers, and magistrates, in obeying, honoring, and sustaining the law. The problem is, it also states that we claim the privilege of worshiping Almighty God according to the dictates of our own conscience, and allow all men the same privilege, let them worship however and what they may. Daniel had to break the king's law because he was bound to keep a higher law. The king's law would have made Daniel betray his God. I think that any law that requires us to betray our God or moral standards should be disobeyed.
That's amazing growth in 9 months. Okay, read us the next one.
Now you do have
what happens, though. It is what happens. Okay,
so
read us the next one.
You do have to understand, this child has really good mentoring. You know,
right.
She works with her parents, and it's obvious. Okay, this is the last one. This was 2 weeks ago. Is it right or wrong? That's the question now. She's gone from stating the whole question to just the title of her question of her book. Of her paper. Is it right or wrong? Oh, all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, what's right or wrong?
Yeah.
Do you
totally
know that
caught you, lured you in?
Yes. Do you know that death is a solution sometimes? You know, you could kill yourself out of the world if you'd like. You could commit suicide. There are tons of ways you could do it. You could shoot yourself, poison yourself, stab yourself, drown yourself. Shakespeare's taught them all to us.
Great.
The question is whether it's right or wrong. In Shakespeare's play King Lear, two sisters, Goneril and Regan, are fighting for Edmund, the Earl of Gloucester, bastard son. Regan thinks he loves her, but Goneril thinks he loves her. In the course of the play, Goneril kills Regan so that she can have all of Edmund's love. Goneril's choice to kill her sister was wrong. It did not solve any conflicts. It made them worse. Goneril was only thinking of herself, only of her gain and no one else. Her allegiance was to herself. In the Book of Mormon, we learn of a young man who is commanded by God to kill Laban. Laban is being stubborn and will not give Nephi and his family the plates that his family rightfully owns. If Laban does not give the plates to Nephi, the people will go astray. In Nephi's situation, I believe that the solution for his problem was a good one because it had to help his people and his God. Nephi's allegiance was to God, and that is why he killed Laban. Both death is a solution, but only a good solution when God commands it.
Wow. How fun. Oh, my gosh. That is really fun to get and see the progression of her papers.
It's amazing. It's totally amazing to me. But like I said, you have to realize that the parents of this child work with her every single week on her writing. And, you know, they go from one sentence to many sentences, to a paper, to something that's really really shows proof. And what I really have enjoyed in the two papers that she wrote is that she's comparing it to her core book, which isn't that a Thomas Jefferson education anyway?
Right.
So, Tiffany, take us on to the next level of writing.
Well, the first one is, I would dare say the only reason and only way her parents can mentor her through that process is that they're writing. They understand the process. So I want to talk a moment about each of us as mentors writing ourselves. There's a few ways that we encourage each of you as our teachers to write, and one of them is in your teacher reports. Those might seem like a little thing when actually they are a small and simple thing, but they carry a lot of meaning. One of the things is they teach you to communicate effectively. besides e-learning the go and report process of and the art of mentoring, because if you're a good mentee, you will eventually be a good mentor, and if you don't take the steps and responsibilities of being a good mentee, don't ever expect yourself to reach a high level of mentoring.
Can I ask you a question, Tiffany?
Yeah.
What do you think is some of the roadblocks we face as adults who've gone through the conveyor belt system in actually sitting down and writing? What are some of the roadblocks that we face? Why don't we write?
The biggest one is that we haven't developed the ability to set up systems. That is the biggest one, because most have the desire, know that it's good, know that it will help them. And, yeah, there are roadblocks actually when you sit down to write, communicate, like because we might be on a lower level of communication, okay, and might be disappointed in ourselves and not want anybody to see that we're not very good at it. There can be that one, that you're sitting there comparing yourself to somebody, and that can stop people because we expect perfection.
Yeah. We expect
sometimes
perfection.
We expect perfection, and writing is really a process. I mean, even this morning, you know, Anelody and I talking about the things that we've written and published, and we're continually improving that level. We, like this year, we're making a huge endeavor to have the grammar and punctuation edited by professionals. You know, because it is a process. It can have the impact it's having, but as soon as we get it to the next level, it will have an even better impact because writing is a process. So that is one of the roadblocks that our teachers face.
Do you remember the first time that you and I met and you gave us a blue book exam? Do you remember what happened that day? I think it's really very interesting because we came to you, me and my two friends, with the intention that we were going to train for TTYC, and I wasn't going to teach it. Do you remember this?
Yeah, you had Zachy, a baby on your hip, like 9 months old.
Zachy hadn't come yet, but it was Matthias who had a lot of all those learning problems, and I was teaching Shakespeare at the time. And so
you had young babies.
I had Matthias who had all those kinds of he'd been hospitalized and, you know, all those problems. And I was teaching Shakespeare, and I was getting my five pillar, and I decided, no, I'm not going to do all that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to teach TJYC. So when the intention of I'm not going to do this, I was taking no risk. I was just coming along for the ride. You sat down, gave us this blue book exam. You handed it to my two friends and myself, and I just started writing. Do you remember that? There was no risk for me. And my other two friends who were thinking they were going to teach the course were like...
Freaking out.
A little bit nervous. Just a little bit nervous. But I have nothing to say. And I'm looking at them like, yeah, fine. You know, of course. It's no problem. Just write what you think. I was very carefree because I had... there was no risk for me. But now I realize, oh my gosh, I ended up teaching TJYC. I can't believe, but I remember you saying, after we were done, you and I were talking about this several months later, you said, I realized that you were the one I wanted to teach that course because you would not hold back.
Well, it's really amazing because all three of you, I just really see the hand of God with Elaine and how she ended up moving and a year later started teaching and
became one of our best TJYC teachers.
Yeah, our trainer. Yeah. She's our TJYC trainer, in fact. I mean, the whole thing, and yet you were the one that absolutely we were supposed to build Mummy together. I mean, it all of a sudden wasn't just about the TJYC. There was a whole another level of us working together, and thank goodness I took the mentor's advice. Thank goodness I took Dr. Bruce's advice and grew small at first.
But when our fears get in our way, it stops us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Our fears
of
maybe our grammar's not going to be perfect, or maybe I don't know how to write a sentence, or I don't know how to form an essay, or I don't know how to do proofs, or whatever it is, you know, whatever fears that we have keep us from writing. Hopefully, we're giving the students enough confidence in the practice scholar levels that they aren't afraid to express themselves.
To just keep on doing and keep on doing. Well, and this is important. At that practice scholar level, I know that the black and white of TJ Yed says to give them DAs unless it's publishable or quality. I know that it says that, but the DA of a practice scholar is they're writing another opinion paper the next week.
That's right.
And the next week they're writing another one. And the next week they're writing another one. Now, at home, with mom and dad, when they're in tears for the first 2 months, because it's a very emotional process for them to write, I don't know how many students aren't in tears or throwing something or frustrated. I mean, there can be some, especially if you've got strong journal writers, okay? But if you've got some who haven't even done that level yet, it can be an emotional process for them. And at home, like, I know that as a practice scholar teacher, I can see when the child, the mother is actually dictating to the child, because those papers will come in and it's obvious that that's the level that they're still at because the parents haven't been trained in our model, which is that the child should be dictating to the mother, and if the sentence is broken, leave it broken. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, like I know the first paper that my son did, he'd spent two full days and couldn't get sentences on the paper. He had crumpled up so many things and had chicken scratches and smudges and half sentences and bullet points all the way down, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was upset about it, and I finally sat down. He didn't even know what I was doing. I had my laptop. He sat on the other side of the kitchen table, and I said, well, what do you think about usury, Jacob? And he started talking to me, and he didn't know. I was writing down everything he said, punctuating it just like he said. And I said, and I would have follow-up questions on what he was saying. Pretty soon, I had half a page written. And he goes, what are you doing? Are you typing what I said? Stop it. Stop it. And I went to the top of the paper, and I wrote, draft one. And I turned it to him, and he looked at it. And I said, come over here and sit by me. And he did. And I wrote at the bottom, draft two. And I said, what else do you think about usury? He went to the next level, and I started writing and writing and writing. And he was done, and I said, great. And I said, do you know how to cut and paste? I said, draft three. And he took the best parts and filled in the difference, and he ended up with two or three paragraphs of his creation. I said, look at this. You know how to think? I said, you're just letting everything get in your way. Just write what you're thinking. But that's how we had to do the first one. Now, what sometimes happens in a home is the mom will dictate to the child so that it's in the child's handwriting, but we can tell it's the mom's or dad's words that come because it's on a whole different... Do you ever get those sometimes, Anality?
No, I don't get them very often.
Because you have good communication with your parents?
Well, they just,
it really is reflective.
Yeah.
But what happens is mom gets sick of that after, like, five opinion papers. And pretty soon she says, go do it on your own. And then finally, the real opinion paper comes in. I've seen that when I've taught in the practice scholar classes, and that's okay too, because eventually mom does get sick of it, and the child has to write. She pushes them out of the nest, you know. But we're going off on that. But the point is here with our teachers is we want you to write yourself, and here's the four things that we encourage you to do: your teacher reports. Personal journal. Now, I want to talk a moment about the personal journal because there are different kinds of journals. It's really interesting. Moving down to Monticello and making new acquaintances and building new relationships down here, I'm getting really close to one of the families that lives down here. She and I do a lot of schooling together with the children. She's in a master's degree program at Georgia College. And she had printed off a week or 2 weeks worth of her journaling. And I said, can I see that for a second? And it was her academic journal. She passed it over to me. And I was like, I would really love it if it's not too imposing, if I could actually read, you know, not just glance at this, but actually learn your style. I said, I really like it. And I'd like to model, I'd like to be able to learn and be able to write in a new form. Because I analyzed my personal journals and how I keep my personal journals, and I realized that my Yahoo account is a major journal for me because I will write something that I care about to Melody or to my sister or to my grandma or to one of my teachers, and I'll
You always have
off.
An audience.
Yeah, I have an audience, and I don't like to rewrite my stuff. And so that I put it in my journal. I have a journal of letters. I have you know, about 80% of my, 50% of my personal journal is letters, probably. The other 50% is actual journal entries.
Wow.
But a roadblock for me in my academic journal is that I didn't keep it short and sweet. So it would discourage me from writing and annotating in my thoughts, because it would be 2 and 3 pages. And, you know, a mom of 5, how long do you get to, how much time do you have? So I was really impressed with Michelle's, because they were just a small paragraph, and every word counted. And it was very succinct. And I'm like, I am going to actually learn this form of academic journal writing. And it wasn't just academic.
Succinct writing.
What?
Succinct writing.
It,
yeah.
Yes, and I can write succinctly, but she was okay not telling everything.
Right. Well, and, you know, I'm thinking about some of the emails that I get from people, and they're hard to read because they're not succinct.
Yeah.
Succinct
yeah.
writing is really an important skill.
Yeah, and but she did it on her annotation, not just on I'm communicating. It just was it was nice. But keeping a personal journal is something that we hold out as an expectation for you as our teachers, because we want you writing, because then you will be better mentors. The next one is actually keeping a TJ planner, a Thomas Jefferson planner. And Melody is such a good example of this, and my Thomas Jefferson planner looks totally different than hers, because she has hers all in notebooks, big, huge, fat notebooks, one whole notebook for her classic section, 10 notebooks for her project sections, maybe 40, I don't know. Anyway, they're all sections in a bookshelf. Mine are all in files. All of my projects are in files, in a note file thing. I mean, they look different, but the point is that we actually keep a planner of those who mentor us and the mentor sessions and things
like
that.
Our mentor reports should be filed.
Yeah, yeah. And then your creations, whatever your personal projects are. That's something that we expect of you. I want to move on now. We've got 20 minutes and we've got a lot to cover. I want to talk about the 6 points of editing. When our students get into TJYC, there's a few things that we ask of them and we get them thinking about. And we capture part of this as the 6 points of editing. And we say, who are you writing to? Your target audience is really important. Who are you writing to? Are you writing to me as your teacher? Are you writing to each other? Are you going to write, you know, who are you writing to? You need to really be very clear about who you're writing to, because it's going to help you find your voice and help you know the language you're going to use. It really dictates a lot that happens in your paper once you figure out who your target audience is.
Can I back up for just 1 second?
Sure.
I want to mention that when I teach, that is really my classroom. That's where I'm learning, because that's how I like to learn, is through teaching. And I do my very best to write the papers along with the students.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm glad you put that one in there, too. That it really is true that is a good practice. And that would mean that there's 5 forms of writing that were, you know, ways to be writing that we actually expect of our teachers.
Well, it can be part of our own creation.
Yeah. It is.
You know, if we're writing along with the students.
I got on my computer this morning and did a search on writing. And Melody, I have no idea if you remember that we did this, but in 2002, we came up with something that's called the Thomas Jefferson Certification Writing. And here are 4 goals for the essays and Blue Book exams. We are trying to inspire the student to see the value in writing. That really is part of the course. We are trying to inspire the students to desire to write well. That is a major goal for TJYC and for the other projects. we are giving the student practice in writing essay style. There are so many forms of writing, and we're giving them practice essay style. We are helping the student practice thinking. And then I have helps and scholar skills for writing. One of the things that happens is teaching them about what an operational thesis is, which is we ask this question, can you prove your thesis? That's an operational thesis. Can you prove your thesis, and is it clear and concise? So as we, as parents, when we coach our students, as the writing coach for TDYC, and as the teacher for TDYC, these are questions we're asking them. Do you have an operational thesis? In other words, can you prove it?
Yeah,
and is it clear and concise?
When I am a writing mentor for those who are in TJYC, I'm very specific about, now you talked about the 6 points of editing, so that structure would go, you're talking about structure. Do you have an operational thesis? Can it be proven?
Right. These are all parts of these over here. Yeah.
Like
this one on creating an, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying it'll help us really if we really quickly list those points.
Okay, I'll list them.
Number one,
these other questions fit in them.
Yeah.
Number one is target audience. Number two, the second point of editing is content. We are going to look at their content. That's a really big one on are they thinking? Okay. What is the content? The third one is the structure, the form that they're going to use. Is it a 5-paragraph essay? Do they have their thesis and their conclusion, where do they, it's really interesting. Sometimes the thesis isn't stated until the conclusion, believe it or not. There are tons of writings
that way. Depending on what
structure
you use.
Exactly. The fourth one is the flow. Are they flowing or have they lost me somewhere? The fifth one is grammar, and the sixth one is punctuation. Now, these questions that I'm going to go through fit over there, so I'm going to kind of bounce back and forth.
Can I interject something here really quickly? My husband said to me today as he was walking out the door, he says, what are you teaching today on the conference call? I said, writing process. And he says, oh, you're good at that one. I said, what are you talking about? My husband has always wanted to be a writer, since he was little. I mean, he's been writing things all of his life. I said, what are you talking about? You're the writer in the family. He says, oh, no. He says, Vanellity, you know that when the kids have a question about writing, who do they come to? Do they come to me or do they come to you? They go to you because you're a great editor of the 6 points of editing.
Yeah.
He says, the only ones I can do is grammar and punctuation. He says, if they want to say something, I don't care how they say it. If it doesn't make sense, I don't know how to make it make sense.
Well, it's really true that there will be people who are better at one kind of editing than another.
Right.
Like when I know that for me, one of the hardest, I can edit, I'm not going to talk about what I can edit, but I know when I need an editor for flow, I know that I can send a paper over to Dr. Troy Hinke. And that's one of the hardest edits to find, is someone who can actually see when the pace got lost and you skipped the ability to flow, or you jumped clear to another thesis and didn't know you did, or your line of logic skipped to too many steps, or you put too many in and so you clogged the flow. I mean, it just depends. There, you actually think differently. I know various different times when Oliver publishes, I'll get a package in the mail, and he'll ask me to review it and edit something. And I don't know which way he appreciates that I'm editing. I usually don't edit too much of his grammar and punctuation. It's usually content that I'll end up editing, and principles and ideas. And sometimes it's a little bit of flow because I'll put an example, like you touch on this, but then you drop it real quick, and I think it would be nice if you had a story here, maybe something like, and, you know, he has to look at the back of the page because I'll be writing in there what would feel good to me to read. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But we edit in different ways, and but as the teacher, we tell them, these are the things I'm looking for. When they're creating an outline, I ask them, how are you going to prove your point? Are you going to use historical examples? Are you going to use reasoning? Where are you going to put them in your paper?
I really like the story of how you discovered what the proofs, good proofs are for a good paper.
Fun. And these are they learn these four proofs, okay? In TJYC, we teach these four proofs, and they come. This is what the highest level of reading is, and it's called thinking. And it's when you read something, and you see something that's not, it's just implied. It's not just, let me do your thinking for you and tell you this or that, but this is something that, it's all implied in this little excerpt from C.S. Lewis, and all of a sudden I realized, because I had read many things by C.S. Lewis, I all of a sudden could see what it was he was doing, okay? And so these four things that we teach called the four proofs actually come because Aneldi and I noticed that it was what C.S. Lewis did, even though he never told us he was doing this. It's what he did. And we realized...
Great knock.
Yeah, okay. Here's what he says. Now, this was his first encounter with his first liberal arts mentor, Kirk.
Which was Great Knock.
Okay? Yeah, the Great Knock. Kirk says, he picks him up, okay? He says, "You are now," said Kirk, "proceeding along the principal artery between Great and Little Bookham." That sentence right there really threw me. I've never heard of a road called the principal artery, okay?
Bookham is the place where he lives.
Right, and I didn't know that Great and Little Bookham was a place in England, okay? So even the first sentence had like four things in it that I had to stop and think about or keep reading to try and pick up on what he meant, right?
You are now proceeding, yeah. Say it again, you are now?
Proceeding along the principal artery between Great and Little Bookham.
Oh my God, the principal artery is the road.
Yeah.
He picks him up at the train station. He gets him in the carriage, and the first thing he says is, "You are now proceeding along the principal artery."
The only thing it could remind me of is conversations with Rachel DeMille. I mean, we can talk, and in 5 minutes she'll use words I've never heard of, you know? Okay. "I stole a glance at him. I began to make conversation in the deplorable manner which I had acquired. I said I was surprised at the scenery of Surrey. It was much wilder than I expected." "Stop," shouted Kirk, with a suddenness that made me jump. "What do you mean by wildness, and what grounds had you for not expecting it?" I replied, "I don't know what," still making conversation. As answer after answer was torn to shreds, it at last dawned upon me that he really wanted to know. He was not making conversation, nor joking, nor snubbing me. He wanted to know. I was stung into attempting a real answer. A few passes sufficed to show that I had no clear and distinct idea corresponding to the word wildness, and that, insofar as I had any idea at all, wildness was a singularly inept word. "Do you not see, then," concluded the Great Knock, "that your remark was meaningless?" I prepared to sulk a little, assuming that the subject would now be dropped. Never was I more mistaken in my life. Having analyzed my terms, Kirk was proceeding to deal with my proposition as a whole. On what had I based, but he pronounced it biased, my expectations about the flora and the geology?
Oh, my God.
Of Surrey?
And what have you biased?
Was it maps?
This guy is a king of rhetoric, isn't he?
Yeah. Was it maps or photographs or books? I could produce none. It had, heaven helped me, never occurred to me that what I called my thoughts needed to be biased on anything. Kirk once more drew a conclusion, without the slightest sign of emotion, but equally without the slightest concession to what I thought good manners. "Do you now see, then, that you had no right to have any opinion whatever on the subject?"
You have no right to have an opinion.
Yes. By this time, our acquaintance had lasted about 3.5 minutes.
But this he met his great mentor, and within three and a half minutes, this was this conversation.
That's right. But the tone set by this first conversation was preserved without a single break during all the years I spent in Bookham. The idea that human beings should exercise their vocal organs, or their pencils, I just put that in, for any purpose except that of communicating or discovering truth was to him preposterous. The most casual remark was taken as a summons to disputation. I soon came to know the differing values of his three openings. The loud cry of stop was flung in to arrest a torrent of verbiage which could not be endured a moment longer, not because it fretted his patience, he never thought of that, but because it was waiting time, darkening counsel. The hastier and quieter excuse ushered in a correction or distinction merely parenthetical, and betokened that, thus set right, your remark might still, without absurdity, be allowed to reach completion. The most encouraging of all was, I hear you. This meant that your remark was significant and only required refutation. It had risen to the dignity of error. Refutation. When we got so far, always followed the same lines. Had I read this? Had I studied that? Had I any statistical evidence? Had I any evidence of my own experience? And so, to the almost inevitable conclusion, do you not see, then, that you had no right? Some boys would not have liked it. To me, it was red beef and strong beer.
Oh,
I love that.
To me, it was red beef and strong beer.
That's right. So he got C.S. Lewis to think, and thank goodness for Professor
Within the
Kirk.
First 3 minutes of their conversation.
Why heck, I have to actually have, you know, he's actually interested in me, he's interested in my thoughts, and I better have some reason for having that thought. Okay.
Oh, that I could be a great mentor like the great Knock.
Yeah, no kidding. Now,
yes, and thank goodness.
Yeah, we really are running out of time, and I want to cover just a little bit more. With the target audience, these are the three things that you ask. And now, here's the fun thing. Even when you're preparing a class, I never, never prepare a class without asking this question of my target audience, asking, what do I want them to know, what do I want them to feel, and what do I want them to do?
And you ask this about your target audience.
Well, yeah.
And that could be included in your content.
Yeah, well, the answering these questions then gives you what you're going to say, it gives you everything. If you don't nail this first off, you might have to write for a while before you can even nail it. But the point is, these three things need to be known.
Yeah.
Stephen King
calls this unearthing the dinosaur, that you do have to write a little bit before you know who your target audience is, and then you have to
go through a process.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it won't be in the first draft sometimes.
Yeah. The content is going to reflect the know, feel, and do. It's going to have the poetry and the prose. We don't even have time to go into all these. Do you realize we always do two calls on writing, and this is why? Because I can, breeze through this stuff, or we can do another call, and it's one of the
we
most
can
important
do another
things.
Call.
That's what we really need to do, because we always have before. We always have two calls on writing, because we are barely into the meat now that we've discussed the philosophy.
Let's do another call on it. I really would like to, I wanted to invite Natalia and Tatiana on to just to tell their experiences about the writing and the writing process. Tatiana and Talia, can you unmute yourself? We'll go ahead and schedule another call to finish this TJYC stuff, but I wanted to get their input.
Yeah, and we can do our call in 2 weeks on this, because we don't have a guest coming in 2 weeks.
Are you on, Tati and Talia?
Tatiana had to go to the church and clean, but I'm here.
Okay. Talia, I wanted to just get some of your feedback on how you feel about writing and what your process has been, and tell them a little bit about what you're doing right now in your life on writing.
Well, unlike most people, sorry, that was my phone. I don't have a fear of writing at all. if anybody tells me to write something, I get excited. I think, oh, that's cool, I'll be fun. Although it has to, I only like to write about things that I have opinions about. So if someone asks me to write something and I don't have an opinion about it, I don't really want to write. But I think that's how most kids are. They don't want to write because they don't have an opinion about it.
Mm-hmm. Because they have nothing in their head.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say I'm the best at grammar and spelling and things like that, but that's what I have my desk for. But I every time I write a new paper, I learn new things about that kind of stuff, and I care more about it every single time.
Yeah. What are you doing right now in your life?
I'm writing a paper on a book on the hero cycle. And it's a poem, and I'm learning about poetry and things like that as I write it. And I'm really loving it, actually.
And who's your target audience, Talia, with that poem?
Children. From the ages of 9 to 12.
And what is it you want them to know when you're done?
That you can embark upon great things and finish them.
And what do you want them to do?
What do I want them to do?
Yeah.
I want them to be inspired and to do great things. I'm sorry, my son's here screaming at me and my husband's farm,
okay.
So I can't hand him
it's
off.
It's all right.
You're good. We can still hear you.
Okay, good.
And what do you want your little 8 to 12-year-olds to feel when they're reading your poem?
Excitement and, like, it's an epic adventure. Things that are, that this really cool thing that this person is doing, and it's going to get them farther into life.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some hard questions. We didn't go over this before you got on the call, but I think you'll have the right answers for it. Do you have a mentoring process or a mentor who's helping you with this?
Yes, I do. I go to a class, and one of the things we have is we talk, have a writing portion of it, and I share
writing
my paper.
Workshop.
Yeah, a writing workshop, and I share my paper with them, and they gave me input and feedback, and I see if I can improve upon what I've already written.
So you have a set up to help you get make it better and better?
Yes.
Wow.
Which is really important, because I went there the first time and said, hey, I have this writing, and then I realized, oh, my gosh, it is not very good. I need a lot of help.
And did they help you?
Yes, and made it 100 times better.
Wow, how cool is that? And so now it becomes a community effort.
Yes. Yes,
good.
It does.
And you do you think that your specialty is poetry? That's your structure that you use best? Because remember we talked about target audience, content. We've already covered those two. You know what your content is. You know your target audience. And now your structure is a poem, an epic poem, right?
Yes, it is.
You think that's your best kind of writing, is epic poetry?
Not necessarily. I'm pretty good at poetry, have been since I was young. But I can write in other styles, but I really enjoy writing poetry.
That was the answer I wanted to hear. Good. So you can do all different kinds of structures?
Yes.
Good. And do you feel like you understand the structures fairly well, or do you just feel confident you can learn the structure if you need to?
I just feel confident I can learn it if I need to.
Good. Very good. Thank you. I really appreciate your input. I know that grammar and punctuation and spelling isn't your forte, but you're not afraid to write. That makes me proud of you.
Well, thanks, Natalia. You're welcome.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. Our call in 2 weeks will continue, where we go into depth on the 6 points of editing. It's really important. We'll be talking about different forms. We'll be talking about flow and how to help you be able to see it. Anyway, we'll have a second call in 2 weeks to finish up some of the content and our training in the writing process. And Anelody, should we open up for question and answer right now, or
yes,
wait?
Let's do.
Okay.
Let's do.
This is Valinda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi. You mentioned four proofs that C.S. Lewis gave, but it went so fast I didn't catch. Can you?
Well, I didn't give them yet.
Oh, okay.
We're running out of time.
Okay,
yeah, I'll go ahead
and
mention them. Yeah,
okay.
I'll tell you what they are, even though we're going to go into them in detail, okay?
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay. Historicity.
I don't even know what that word is.
Anything that happens in history.
Historical evidence. Yeah, historical evidence. You've got stories.
Oh, historicity, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I just couldn't hear it.
Logic and reason.
Okay.
Personal experience. And the revealed word.
Okay.
Personal experience also includes other people's experience, in your own realm. Does that make sense?
Like my sister went to Africa, and so from her I learned.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Anyone else? Questions?
I have a question.
Okay, who is this?
This is Sheila from Mission Viejo, California.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi. I don't quite know where to start because I probably have so many questions, but I guess my main thing is I have two sons, ages 11 and 14, who both don't want anything to do with thinking or writing, period. So where does one start? I mean, they're at the age where they should be.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
And this might be brutal. Don't take it brutally, okay?
Oh, okay.
the question is, how often are they seeing you write? That's the question. Do they see you keeping a journal? Do they see you taking notes on the things you're reading? Do they see you writing letters to family members? Do you write to them? Do you ever express yourself to them in writing?
Are you writing papers?
Are you writing? In 3 months, if you actually do the five or actually try and make it so that every day they see you writing, don't even talk about writing with them. Just start doing it. Start living it. And then in 3 months at the next mentor interview, bring it up.
Okay. Wait, which mentor interview is that?
When you have your interview with them.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
Right. As parents, when you have a weekly interview with them in 3 months, after for 3 months, every single day, them actually in the peripheral see mom writing. And
okay.
You bring it up.
In the open where they can see you write.
That's
I have my computer that's right down on the dining room table, and the kids say, Mom, what are you working on? I'm writing my book. Me and Tiffany are writing a book called The Parent Mentor. Can you read it to me? Yeah, I'll tell you this really funny story I'm doing right now.
Okay. Okay. I have been doing better recently, and they see me with my notebook taking notes and things like that, but I don't really write papers because I don't really know where to start myself as far as...
Go to the next level. What are you teaching right now?
No, actually, I took the training this year and intended to teach, but I had some health issues that came up, so I ended up canceling the whole thing. So
are you doing it by pillar?
Pardon?
Are you reading?
Are you reading right now?
Yeah, I have several books I'm reading.
Okay, then you have plenty to write about.
Okay.
Are you thinking right now? If you're thinking right now, then you have plenty to write about.
Okay, see, I think a lot, but I guess I don't have the confidence that anything that I would have to say would mean anything to anybody else yet because I don't feel like I'm that far along in my...
Then decide to yourself who your target audience is. If it's just you and your husband and your children, that's good enough for me.
Okay.
Yeah. But set up a structure literally where 15 to 30 minutes in the day, they're going to see mom writing. And it will be like magic that their fight will disappear.
You have to realize that if I'm writing a paper, I have to have chunky time, so I have to have 4 hours to write a paper. But if I'm writing a journal, I can do it for 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah,
okay.
So it depends on what system you need to set up.
Okay.
But they need to see you doing it for you to have their respect, or for them to respect what you say when you say, you know, it's really important that you're writing right now. The crazy thing about education is there's a lot of nonverbal communication that happens between a mentor and a mentee. And the nonverbal communication is one thing, and that is example.
Okay. Okay.
And there is more power in that. What's that?
I was going to say, do you have any advice for me? Because I haven't been doing Thomas Jefferson for very long, and I don't feel like I'm, you know, very successful at it yet. And I keep trying to get back on the conveyor belt, and I keep kind of panicking, like, oh, my gosh, if I don't make them write, you know. So when you just said to go for 3 months without doing anything, it's like scary.
Yeah, it's going to be real scary. But what's going to happen is that it will inspire them, and inspire is 90% of the process. You can require all you want for the next 3 months, but what you really want is for them to buy into it.
Right.
And when they buy into it, you will have no battle for the next 10 years. And they will be writers for their life. Now, I do have to say, you have to go by your inspiration. If you get inspired in 2 weeks to do it in 2 weeks.
Okay.
But the point is, you're going to work on an environment of inspiring them, which means you've got to go do it.
Right, right. Okay.
And you've got to share it with them. Do it and share it with them. Oh, guys, I wrote this really cool paper, or I have this really cool thought, and I want to read it to you.
Or ask their advice. Say, I'm trying to go from this point to this point. I don't know how to get there. And you will be shocked that your boys know how to think. My dad did this to me. And I don't know if he did it on purpose. I'm going to call him today and ask him if he actually did this, on purpose, or if he really meant it, because I really felt like he meant it. But I would come in from doing whatever I was doing. I'd see him at the dining room table with his yellow legal pad set out, and he'd have his scripture set out. He'd have 5 or 6 books set out, and he would say to me, he'd say, Tiff, I'm writing a talk on this and this. And he'd say, what do you think? What should I tell him? I'd sit at the table, and I'd talk to him for 20 minutes to an hour, and he'd have his whole talk written because I'd tell him how to do it. And I was 11. I was 11, and this must be really real. You realize my dad is a teacher at Georgetown College, okay? He calls me on the phone a year ago. He says, Tiff, they want me to give them a syllabus. I shouldn't tell this story. Okay, he says, I'm teaching public speaking, and they want me to give them a syllabus. The college wants a syllabus. I can't just go in and teach every week. They want a syllabus. And I said, okay. And I pulled out I said, well, let's get together. So we had a 6-hour drive from St. George to Salt Lake the next week. We arranged that I'd go with them so no kids, we could actually think. And it was the same thing as when I was 11. He'd say, what do you think? And all I would ever do is ask him, well, Dad, what do you want your students to know? He'd start telling me. I'd pull out my laptop. I'd start writing it. I'd say, great. What else do you want them to know? He'd start telling me. I keep writing it. I'd say, well, great. And then I'd say, well, did you know that this book and this book and this book teach that? And he says, well, yeah, and so does da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. I said, great, there's your reading list. And here's what teaches this and this. And he goes, and so does da-da-da, da-da-da. And pretty soon he'd have his, 8-week outline, everything. And we'd break it up. And he'd say, this is what they're going to do. This is their assignment. This is this. I don't know. Maybe he didn't do it on purpose. Maybe my dad's an external processor like I am and just needed somebody to talk it out with, you know? But if you do that with your kids, you will train them to think.
It's really true, Tiffany. I just want to be a second witness to that. Tatiana comes over, Mom, I need to talk. And the reason why she does that is because we've established a relationship of we talk about these things through together. I just need to. I was talking to her about aristocracy, natural aristocracy, and I said, Tati, I really want to get a grasp on this. I'm trying to understand it a little bit better. I understand that the war between the North and the South really was a war about aristocracy. And I said, where can I go to get the information about this? And she gave me an article, and then we started talking about it. And eventually, now it's in my paper. Include them in your thoughts, so it's the whole process. It's not just writing. It's the whole process of thinking and talking and discussing and getting them on the same page that you're on by including them in what you're studying. And that's going to inspire them. I know you feel like you're in crisis. I do have to tell you, you have an 11-year-old and a 14-year-old, and I've been there. I didn't start doing a Thomas Jefferson education specifically or formally until my oldest daughter was 14 years old. So I really understand how you're feeling. And I've got to tell you what I did. I went in with both barrels loaded. I jumped right in. I knew I was in crisis. I knew I was.
That's exactly how I feel.
I did not blink an eye. I just jumped in, and I said, you know what? I have core phase. I have lower learning phase. I need a scholar phase. My daughter needs a scholar phase. And do you know why Lemmy exists? Is because I was in crisis. Because I understood that if I could get in the classroom, I would be able to get a scholar phase at the same time, and my daughter could get a scholar phase. So teaching became extremely important to me because it was going to take both of us along and give us a common language. I really recommend it. I obviously you weren't able to do that this year, but even setting up a small formal class in your own home would be an opportunity for you to say, "Hey, I want to learn this, guys. Can you learn it with me?"
Mhm. Okay.
I know how it feels to be in crisis.
Yeah, that's exactly how
I feel. But you have to realize that if you set up a system that's going to help you, it takes a lot of the fear away.
Okay. What would you recommend? Because as far as I know, I'm the only person I know in my area that is doing Thomas Jefferson. I've tried to get a few friends in going on it, and they've read the book or they've been to.
What is your area? Where are you at?
Orange County, California. And so I have no community. I have no other scholars, kids for my kids to be in a peer group with, and I did set up a colloquium for this month on one of the seven habits for, you know, highly effective teens. So I'm trying to get something going.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
If you're in a place that there aren't other families, this
uh-huh.
is just something I've learned. You actually have to start by focusing on the adults. Like you
okay.
said, you're trying to get other parents, but most adults are receptive to a once-a-month class
Tiffany.
Where you can even take the content of what we're teaching. And teach
Tiffany,
it there.
I think she can start either way, with youth or adult.
You can start with youth, but I mean if you actually want a peer group later
yeah.
for your kids.
And I'll tell you what motivates parents more than anything is their kids. So,
yeah, right.
you know, there's two sides to that coin. But I will tell you what you need to do is connect, that, because there are lots of people in Orange County. I'm going to give you the name of two people that you need to contact because, who can help you get connected with people down there.
Okay.
Sean Crane.
Oh, she's in the LA area, right?
Yeah, but she's
right.
going to
okay.
teach you how to connect
people. Area.
Okay.
Sean is an amazing connector.
Okay.
Okay, so she's going to teach you how to connect with people. And
okay.
Dina Ortiz.
Okay, I've met
who's
Dina.
In Riverside County.
Okay.
You've got someone who's in Riverside County, someone who's in LA County, and I'm going to guarantee you there's some crossover there. They can connect you up with Orange County people.
Okay.
You
That's
call
great.
Them. You tell them what's going on in your life. You tell them what's... These two women can become great mentors for you. They are fabulous, fabulous contacts. They're,
okay.
they're well-trained in TJ Ed. Dina Ortiz sponsors the TJ Forum down
wow.
there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and she has a list of people, since she's in charge of the forum down there, she has a list of people that I'm sure she can connect you to.
Okay, okay, try that.
But it is
okay.
the art of connection. Have you read the book, The Tipping Point?
No, uh-uh.
It's probably one of the most important next reads you'll have. Pick it
okay.
up today.
Okay, I will. I've been wondering where I should start as well, so that's a good spot for me.
Well, it's because you need to start connecting with people because your children need a peer group, and you can
yes.
feel it, and you feel, and I've so been where you are. I know how you're feeling. It's a scary place to be,
mm-hmm.
but you're on the right track. I guarantee you on the right track.
Okay. What would you recommend for the first way to get parents involved? You know, should I try to
well,
get them to one of the...
Well, like I said to you, yeah, face-to-face is really a great resource. But, you know, there's no better way to the heart of a parent than to go through their child.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, tell them, I'm offering this class for anyone who's interested. Come along with me. And it's not too late
okay.
to start if you're feeling better.
Oh, really? You don't think it? Because I kept thinking, well, maybe I should wait till next year. No, that's too long.
No, it's not too late to start.
Okay.
Not too late to start. Start it in January. Tell people, I'm starting it in January. Come along with me.
Okay. Great. That's good to know, because I was feeling like I would be way too far behind to get started now. And so, but I guess that's conveyor belt thinking. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate all your advice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, we are really late, Tiffany. I think it's time for us to wrap it up. Thank you for all of your patience.
Thank you, everyone, and we'll get on with you again in a couple of weeks and continue on the scholar skills of writing. Yeah, the writing process.
Very good.
All right. Awesome.
Thank
Have
you.
A happy Thanksgiving next week, and the holidays are upon us,
good
and
luck.
It's so fun.
And go keep going. Keep doing it. Keep being those great scholars that we know you are.
That's
Thank you very much. We'll see you. Bye-bye.